Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Mason Wazwaz.
You guys, we got our alternative exposure grant and all that. So this show is brought to you by Southern Exposure and the Andy Warhol Foundation.
Do we have to do that for every show?
And the
Kate, can we discuss this first?
Catherine T. and John G. MacArthur Foundation.
And
viewers like you. Really?
It's really true. Listeners like you.
No, listeners.
And listeners. Oh, right. My bad. My bad. Sorry.
Hey, do we have to do that every time?
No, we don't have to do it at all, really.
Oh, you just wanted to do a little funder line there in the beginning? You wanted to get all PBS on this
show? Well, I had to go and give a little talk, as you know, and Maysoon wasn't there.
I ditched out.
And I just want to apologize to everyone that was there.
That Kate didn't look at you at all.
I was nervous as fuck. I'm a deeply neurotic person.
And it was funny because a lot of people after the fact mentioned to me on the side that they thought that you were putting on some kind of a ploy or an act, that you were just doing something.
Because I just exude confidence at all times and no one can believe.
I think your like neurosis comes off as like confidence. It's like wild and crazy confidence, I don't give a shit kind of thing.
Well,
you know?
Our interviewee today, Jennifer Locke, and I share a common characteristic of being deeply shy and maybe a little anxious and possibly insecure.
She still doesn't come off that way to me, even though she said it.
And trying to overcompensate for that by being very outgoing. But anyhow, we do have an interview with her, and I have to say, Maysoon,
she was awesome.
This was one of my favorite interviews.
Me too. So
fun. I felt
fun.
Inspired. I still feel inspired.
Do you think it's because we did it at like in like a comfortable home situation?
I think we should start doing it more often
in like a house.
Secluded place.
Secluded, like in a cave?
Anyhow, enjoy this interview. All right, we're here talking to artist, arts educator, surfer. Yeah?
True.
Jennifer Locke.
Hi.
Should I add any other nomenclature?
Glamorous fashion icon around San Francisco. Legend. I don't know. You could just keep piling it on. Yeah. It's a big pile of something.
How long have you lived in San Francisco?
I moved here in 1987 as an 18-year-old whippersnapper. Yeah, to go to the San Francisco Art Institute. So I've been here 28 years. You do the math.
Damn.
Yeah. Wait, is that right? I don't know. I'm 46 there. I just did the math for you. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's been 28 years.
One of the other interviews that we did not too long ago was with Cliff Hengst.
Oh, my God. I love Cliff Hengst. He's an old friend of mine. We actually did. Ooh.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask about. You did a performance.
We did one performance together, and then we're supposed to do another performance together, but somehow something happened with the venue and we canceled. I think it was at the Firehouse.
I don't know.
Not the Firehouse. It's Kilowatt now. It used to be called the Firehouse. And before and we did a piece back there that I think five people saw. And it was like Stephen Holman, Josephine Huang, Tony Labatt, maybe two other people. Some things happened.
You peed in his mouth.
Oh,
huh?
He told you. God bless you, Cliff Hengst, if you're listening. I did. And we took pictures of our genitalia.
It was planned.
Yes. He was telling stories about his grandmother while I peed his mouth. We were young and wild.
Yeah.
And we didn't give a damn. Yeah.
What was this? I'm just curious to know what the conversation was like, thinking about what you were going to do.
You know, that was a long time ago, you guys. And of course, we have zero documentation from it because back then, it's ephemeral. Mm. Fuck it. And I don't know. I mean, there's a good argument for that, but
you have the oral history.
We have the oral history. And Cliff really has the oral history. Yeah, I really don't remember our process. We probably were just trying to come up with things. Yeah, who the hell knows? We're probably laughing a lot, I'll say that. But, you know, we also, you know, I'm talking about it in a humorous way. But both Cliff and I have very strict formal interests. So although, you know, there was all this prurient kind of subject matter, it was in a highly formalized structure, so...
I wanted to ask about that too. About taking, like, I don't know. I feel like when, at least when I think about performance art, especially stuff that starts to get into like the abject and like bodily fluids, I don't think about it always in such a like formalist. And your work, it has so much concern for formal.
That's
issues.
An awesome question that I'm stoked you asked me, because that's actually something I'm really, really fucking interested in. Is taking something. I mean, I like the challenge of taking a material or a piece of content that's I don't know, super loaded and maybe even cliche. And doing my darndest to get it so formalized that it kind of gets drained of that loadedness, and it sort of transcends its own meaning, and it becomes something else. I mean, like a good example of that is I did a couple of pieces where I was using fake blood, and I just became obsessed with fake blood, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I just wanted to use, well, my first thought is I wanted to make a fake blood slip and slide at Berkeley Art Museum, because I got invited, you know, they have those ramps in there, right? So that was my fantasy. And I just became fucking fixated on fake blood. And I'm like, oh my God, do I really have to use this material? Because it's the stupidest material. And also, I wasn't allowed to make my own fake blood, which is really cheap. I had to use quote unquote real fake blood.
Like trademark, like fake blood.
Yeah, stage blood. And so I just became obsessed with this fucking material. I'm like, this is like corny, because, you know, performance art and blood and the body and fluid. And so, you know, I became fixated on this really corny cliche material, but I had to do it. So I actually did a different piece where I wound up wrestling with it. And I mean, literally wrestling in the piece. And I actually did get to do my fake blood slip and slide eventually over at Incline Gallery, which is all ramps.
Perfect.
So that was awesome. They invited me to do something there, and I said,
that's perfect for that space. I know, as a former mortuary.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I know.
And your P piece.
And my P piece.
SF MoMA.
Back to P. Well, P came back. I mean, it's funny because I used to do that a lot when I was younger in my work, and I hadn't done it in probably like 15 or 20 years. And the one at SF MoMA. Yeah, it came back.
But that was also very formal.
Very formal. Yeah, I wanted to make a fountain and draw a circle. And, you know, my big regret about that piece is that I wasn't able to film it from above, you know, because I really wanted to shoot it down, like straight down, so you could just see this circle being drawn. And so, you know, the circle of the urine, and then the circle of the mop going around and erasing it, and then the circle of the towels drying the mop stain, so it's just completely gone. And the audience being moved in and out of the space, or more like out and in.
When you're working with a group like SF MoMA, how much information do they ask from you? Like, how much do they want to know?
Well, for that show, they had like 1,000, I'm exaggerating slightly, but it was their closing event. And I was working well without getting into too many specifics. Basically, I didn't give them full information. I gave them enough information, I felt, but ultimately there was a bit of there was a bit of unhappiness about my piece, and so that was a little bit upsetting, but I was really happy. I thought
they weren't expecting what you did, or
I don't know what the real issue was, because so, you know, I told them I was going to get liquid on the floor, and if they had asked me, I know, I said, is it okay if I get liquid on the floor, because I've done enough of this kind of work that I know, like, they don't really need to know in my, you know, because I'm going to clean it. Like, I clean it with bleachy water.
But I'm sure you were, like, full of water.
I was.
In order to do
I
that.
Was an,
it's like, I'm sure it was pretty.
I was so. That was actually horrible pain. And fucking Lucas Mergida, who is a wonderful artist, by the way. Let me put in a plug for him. And actually, Tom Laughlin helped me. He's also wonderful. But Lucas kept making me laugh. I was going to punch him.
he was trying to make me laugh,
that son of a bitch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But anyway, I told them I was going to get liquid on the floor, and if they had asked me specifically, I would have told them that was my plan. I'll tell them this, and if they're like, what kind of liquid? And then I'd say, well, you know, but I didn't tell, they didn't ask, so I didn't tell them. So I figured, you know, I'm taking care of it. I'm taking responsibility. But apparently, I don't know what happened. I don't know if somebody got upset. The TV station was there, but like very early in the piece, they basically just moved the camera. So I don't know if it was about that. I was told that, well, we had to hire facilities to come and sterilize the floor. And I was like, well, I already sterilized it. First of all, healthy urine is actually sterile. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I cleaned it with bleachy water. And thirdly, aren't they tearing that room down? That was the other part. But like, you know, I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody got in trouble and so they had to slap my wrist a little bit, which is, mm-hmm. you know. But I was actually, it's funny, I was really, maybe it's because I'm so fucking jaded. I mean, I hope I'm not that jaded, but I was really surprised at how shocked people were by it. Like, I have some...
Like, audience members?
I guess it seems like, I mean, if people are familiar with their work, then they maybe weren't shocked.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, even...
SF MoMA has a very broad...
Yeah, no, I think the museum itself was a little bit off-put by the actual... I mean, I could be wrong about this, but I got the impression that the content itself was problematic for them. And the other thing is that my piece was on at 3:30 in the morning, you know, so that was the other part of it. I felt I was being given like, ah, it's fine, you can do whatever you want, you know. I mean, obviously I wasn't going to do anything. Like, I think I was asked, are you going to do anything sexual? I said, my work isn't actually sexual at all, actually, so no. So, how could you be surprised that in a museum institution would have a problem with, you know, why would I be surprised about that?
Right.
You know, and that's the problem, is that, you know, you work in an alternative venue, which is great, but there's no money. Sometimes there's hardly any you know, assistance or resources, or you have to bring all your own equipment and you're paying for everything, but there's a lot more freedom. And then you work with an institution and sometimes there's money and you get a lot of help or whatever, but then there's all these restrictions. So it's a weird, difficult, especially if you're making difficult work, which I don't think of my work as that difficult, but apparently, I mean, maybe it isn't, but actually my work is difficult for institutions to handle. Even when I did the piece at Berkeley, you know, I wanted my piece to be taking place not in the space, but kind of a little bit to the side. And they had to put me on the loading dock area, and I was like blocking traffic. It was just, I'm just all, the kind of work I make has a direct relationship to architecture. So, you know, I want to be in these spaces that aren't really necessarily there. They have a relationship to the traditional space, but maybe they're a little bit to the side, or I'm in a closet, or, you know, and that, it just feels like I'm always in the fucking way, which kind of sucks, but I guess you don't get to pick the work you make.
Because some of your work has a big endurance part. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what you do in your mind.
Wow. Okay, I'm not quite sure what the question is, but you're saying, what do I do in my mind to prepare or just...
No, while you're...
What's like, my brain like in the day? It's a fucking torture chamber. It's hell in here.
While you're performing? Well, no.
All the time.
So, for instance, your performance at Southern Exposure, where you were in... Yeah. And I think that wasn't for you. You've been stuck in position for longer than that, right? Where, I think, what was each position, 20 minutes?
Like an 8-hour performance. Yeah. I watched that one on my
computer.
You did.
Thank you for watching. Yeah.
But you were like taped up and still for like 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah. They were taping me up, and once I was taped in the position, I would hold the position for 20 minutes. Yeah.
So what do you do?
Like, what do I do? You know, it's funny. A lot of this stuff... I'm not quite sure how to answer this, because it's like, in the moment, it's just a task to me. Like, in my work, I always think about it as like a series of tasks, and I just have to get through the tasks. I'm fully focused on that. I'm not thinking about doing laundry. I'm actually highly, highly focused. Maybe it's almost meditative. Maybe.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
That kind of sounds like bullshit to me to hear myself say that, because I'm such a, like, my brain is like a beehive most of the time, but you know, I was an artist model when I was first in school. Oh. And you know, you have to hold those positions sometimes, and you just learn how to just kind of... I'm not a good meditator. That's the funny part about this. I'm actually, I just started this daily thing that I'm doing that's kind of working for me, but it's the first time I've ever stuck to anything in my life. So,
when you're doing your performance work, you're like focused in.
I'm very focused, and it's all about getting through the set of actions. Kind of like I'm in service to the task. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what I want or what my desire is, or you know, if I feel impatient, it doesn't matter, because I just have to wait. So it's almost like, I would imagine this is what people feel like when they join a cult. Like everybody, like the thing is making decisions for you. It's like this, maybe it is like that. Like you're giving yourself over to this other bigger thing that's kind of bigger than you.
That actually sounds really relaxing.
It's kind of weirdly, you know, I have to say, every time I go to the dentist and I get my teeth cleaned, I'm like, fuck, this is the first time I've really been able to just not do anything. Isn't that pathetic? Yeah, it's like this deferral of responsibility. You know, you don't, I'm just right here. Maybe it's like a way of being really highly present in this funny way, which I know we're fucking talking about meditation and this other thing. It's such a weird
Makes
to make
sense.
That comparison. But
do those performances move slowly or quickly for you? Or how does that work in the, I mean, that was an 8-hour
piece. It didn't move slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, for one thing, most of the time I was interacting with the two assistants.
Right.
But again, it was like, I mean, you know, my work is a dominatrix. A lot of people, I think, the primary drive to go see a professional dominatrix, just letting go. It's like the surrender of responsibility, of will, and it's such a huge relief for people. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, like, it's so incredibly stressful for me to do these pieces, preparing for them. Once I'm in the piece, actually, it's almost like, okay, now this thing is happening. But the prep is just I've been feeling like I don't even want to do performance anymore because it just kills me. Like, it destroys me for like weeks. And it's not even, I mean, the piece itself can be incredibly difficult, but it's like the physicality of it is like the least of my problems. It's all like the mental and the planning and the, ooh, is this a good idea? Because my ideas always sound incredibly stupid to me when I first get them. I'm like, wow, this is the dumbest idea ever. And sometimes I have to tell somebody about it and be like, does that sound stupid? And they always say yes. No, they don't. Usually people are like, yeah, it sounds great. Even though they might be totally lying to me. But that, or, you know, just talking it out. Or I've gotten to the point now where I've been making this kind of work long enough that I kind of know it doesn't really matter if I think it's stupid or not. Like if it feels like a strong idea or a potentially strong idea, that all I have to do is like map out the structural, the visual structure, the audience, the way the audience can view the piece. I mean, we haven't even been talking about my video work, which is a whole other animal, but...
Oh, we will.
Oh, we will. Soon doesn't leave any stone unturned.
So you did this piece with Yerba Buena Center for the Arts?
Yes.
In small room?
Yes.
And that might not be the typical video work you do, but were you invited people to send in... You did these collaborations through video.
Yes.
That were fascinating.
Oh, was that where you go to their...
Yeah.
So
at Yerba Buena, gallery goers would see, the first day of the when it opened, you would see these six blank monitors. They were little. And then there was like on the wall some text that said, I invite you to, how did I put it? It's funny because really I was inviting myself, but
right.
I invite you to have me come and do a performance in your home. Yeah. And no, but it was, but basically like the idea was, and I was very clear from the beginning because I have run into trouble with this myself, where I said, this is not a collaboration. This is my work, but you're going to be in the piece. So if you're cool with that, fine, but this isn't a collaboration. And I had some actions. Yeah, I had a list of actions and I would try to fit the best one to the person and I would run a few by them and oh my God, I couldn't believe what people wanted. Like, I mean, I did some difficult shit with people and they were really into it and they were so generous and I made a huge mess. I mean, I cleaned up the mess, of course, because that's how I am. But it was really cool because I was feeling a little bit oppressed by my practice and I was feeling like I didn't get to, my work starts to feel like it's not any fun to make sometimes. And so I was trying to go back, and I've been doing this more the last few years, where I've been kind of trying to use approaches that I had when I was a younger artist, you know, when I was just a real whippersnapper. I was a lot more open-ended about things. I was more experimental. I would do more playful things. I mean, I had I actually had a cable show with my buddy Rodney O'Neill Austin for a couple of years, where we did this, it was like on a Viacom cable, and we would get artist pieces and we would edit all this stuff together, and it was very playful, and we just shoot a bunch of shit and just show it. Whereas now I'm like, so like, oh, I can't show that.
It has to
be just so, exactly. So it was cool because I got to do these very simple gestures, and I would just manipulate the footage. It was interesting. The structure of the piece revealed itself to me as it unfolded. And so people would say, so the piece was to send me an email. So the person would, and I would just did it in, Well, I mean, people were contacting me like, I live in Colorado. Can you come? And I'm like, okay.
Like, no.
That's a rule I should have thought of. They have to be in San Francisco proper. Yeah. So I decided not to, just to do people in San Francisco. And so whoever sent me the first email got first and then second, third. So anyway, this first piece I did, he was a DJ. So I had this piece where I wanted to play some music, but I was going to play, have them listening on a Walkman, or Walkman, listen to me, an MP3 player. I'm old. Okay. Yeah, I just said Walkman. Listening on an MP3 player. And they'd be listening to the piece, they'd be listening to the music backwards, and then I was going to have the footage shown forward, so it would look a little, but then we went, anyway, so basically, I wasn't sure if I was going to be in the piece or not, but then, you know, a lot of my work is about kind of showing the construction of, or part of my work is about showing the construction of something, or like kind of interrupting just the unhindered view of what's happening. And so I decided I was going to be in the piece, but you wouldn't see my face, but I'd be like shooting pictures, which, you know, documenting the action. So what wound up happening was, because of that first piece, I manipulated the footage either forward or backward. I did something to the speed, and then I was always in the piece, taking photos or performing the, something onto the figure, you know? So yeah, but people were so fucking cool and so generous, and they really, let me do, like, one guy let me pour black paint all over him, and this other guy let me pour flour all over him, and it was really dusty and gross, and his head's all covered in flour. And Dorothy Santos, who I think you had on your show, love her.
Yeah.
She let me glue my face to her back. And it took forever. I don't even think it dried all the way. I was like, if it were me, I would have sat there till it dried. But I was like, and she probably would have been fine with it. But I'm like, God, we've been sitting here like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. We're in her bedroom. And she's just like, my face is like stuck to her. Anyway. Yeah. So, you know.
I remember that one. Was that one the later ones or?
Well, they all happened pretty quickly. Like the piece was,
there were three that were okay. On when I went in.
Okay. Well, you can see them on my website. Okay. www.jenniferlott.net. Okay.
.net.
Oh. I know .com is a real estate agent.
Good luck buying her out.
I know.
Just good luck.
Just good luck. I know. She's cagey. So, yeah. So I just kind of put the pieces up as I made them. And I think it happened over the course of about 2 months. It was really pretty great. I actually really enjoyed making that piece. And in fact, I've been thinking about continuing it. Because I'd like to.
I think that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
I mean, as a viewer, it was really cool to watch.
And it's really fun because I can go into people's houses and it's almost like, it's very playful for me in a way that a lot of my work is not. And I've made a lot of work like that where I'm not the main subject. Like I was doing all the wrestling video pieces I did early on when I was first back in, back making work again. So after my long break from not making art for a long time. So,
was that the jujitsu? Was that when the jujitsu was getting hot?
Okay. It was getting hot, spicy, caliente. No, I was in school as a youngster, and I was making all this work, and I was, I graduated from undergrad, and then I was working at a daycare for like, I don't know, $6 an hour or something, and I just got really disillusioned, which is weird that an artist would get disillusioned, but I did. And I wound up somehow on a couple things had happened where I'd become aware of BDSM and professional dominatrix work. And I was intrigued by it. And I don't know, I just got this hair up my ass, and I saw an ad in the back of something or other. Not a literal hair up my ass, by the way. That was figurative. Although apparently now literally and figuratively mean the same thing, which is wrong in my opinion, but the dictionary says that now. So I just wound up calling this ad on a whim, and off my career went. And it was so fascinating to me because BDSM, of course, has all this kind of parallel things in it that my artwork has, you know, like sort of talking about audience control or what the audience sees and doesn't see, sculpture, like the body is a sculptural object, power, and all these issues I was really interested in my work. And so I became a dominatrix, and I was like, fuck art. And I was making great money, and it wasn't like I decided to stop making work. I just didn't feel interested in it anymore. And so for about 10 years I didn't make anywhere. And then I got into jiu-jitsu as well, and I was competing very seriously and training all the time and then doing BDSM. And so I was kind of jiu-jitsu is again, you've got like this dominance and submission. I mean, you're literally trying to to dominate your opponent, right? And to get a submission from them. I mean, this is the language that's used. Mm-hmm. And this kind of physicality that I don't think I'd experienced that level of athletic intensity. And so I just became completely absorbed in these two worlds. And then I started to miss, like, I didn't miss making work at all. I think I made one piece that entire time. And then,
do you think that you were getting like creative fulfillment from these other activities in the same way that you get it from making art?
Not in the same way, but yes, I was getting creative. I was certainly getting creative fulfillment from doing BDSM and money.
Right.
Yeah. 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 And my audience was like, I always felt like I was struggling to advocate for the kind of work I was making, because even back then I was doing these pieces where I'm like, I need your entire office for, like, you know, the next 8 hours, you know. And I know it's a pain in the ass to deal with that if you're running a space, but at the same time, like, I just didn't feel like my work was getting supported. And so, you know, here I have somebody who's like a literally, again, captive audience, you know, like, that wants what I'm doing. You know, it was just a very different kind of way of kind of using my creative energy, for sure. And I do think I was, well, when I first went back to school to grad, you know, that's what happened, is that I couldn't, like, I was trying, like, I wanted to make work after a while, and I had these ideas for pieces, but I kind of couldn't quite make it happen. So then I wussed out, and I decided to go back to grad school. And I also was like, you know, I don't want to be a dominatrix for the rest of my life, so I thought, well, I'll check out teaching, which is a great way to make a living. Not
much money involved in that one.
No. So I went back to school, and at first I felt like, oh, fuck, you know, all those years I wasted, you know, doing this other work. But in the end, I feel like I was actually really thinking, I was definitely massaging all that kind of conceptual, mm-hmm. artistic. I mean, I personally don't feel that doing BDSM is... For me, it's not my artwork. I don't, mm-hmm. think of it as my artwork at all. It's not my art. It's an art. It's a craft. But so I think that all those things I was working on with that stuff definitely came into my new work. And certainly, I've never wanted to be like a sex worker artist. Like, there were, mm-hmm. a lot of those in the late 80s, early 90s, and I never felt an affinity for that work. I mean, I don't want to generalize too much, but so for me, I didn't want it to be about that. It was more like the challenge again of using something loaded, just one element in a context that would sort of change how it was being read, hopefully. So
where did you get your graduate degree?
The Art Institute. Yes, I know. And then where do I teach? The Art Institute. I know. Does that make me a mama's boy, kind of, in a funny way?
Like, maybe.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've taught other places.
I have.
Yeah.
Not St. much. St. Mary's. Actually, I did teach a lot at St. Mary's. That was actually the first place I taught out of school.
So you don't need to be Catholic to teach there?
No.
No, definitely I'm like, not. So are you a Catholic then?
I actually was raised sort of Catholic. Not hardcore, just kind of Catholic. I did get my first communion. Mm-hmm.
So you get to go to heaven.
I get to go to heaven.
That's awesome.
I don't know about you two heathens.
No, we're
I'm
fucked.
Going.
Not me.
Screwed. Yeah.
It's all right. I'll probably hang out in purgatory for a while.
That's all right.
Yeah. You get. I don't think I'm gonna. I'm going straight to hell.
You're going straight down.
Oh yeah.
Did you get baptized?
No, nothing.
Oh shit! Really?
And my dad was raised Catholic.
Wow. Even though we're good people.
No, that doesn't count for shit. I'm
doesn't
gay.
Count. Oh God, gay. That's right.
Oh shit.
Forget.
Wow, you got the triple whammy, my friend. I get to do whatever I want because I can just go to confession on my deathbed and be like, "Yeah, I did a lot of fucked up shit. You should have seen what I did at work today. I inflated someone's balls." You can edit that out if you want.
Oh, okay, what? Have you really?
Yeah,
I've done. Is that it. Weird? Should I not ask?
Oh, you can okay. ask,
with,
but I don't know.
With saline?
Saline.
Yeah.
I've done it.
Ooh, Maysoon's gonna shit.
No, I want to know.
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
I haven't. I thought you were just joking.
Sack with saline, and they enlarge. Maybe my mom shouldn't listen.
Whoa! Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just
No, it's
know.
Okay. No, it's a weird thing.
Really?
Yeah, I remember.
Do they get really heavy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they do. They do. I mean, I haven't done it to the point
and
where...
And how do they drain? Do they drain?
It just reabsorbs into the body, girl.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Saline.
Yeah, saline. Usually you get like a little bag and you just put the thing and you wait for
kind
to drain
of like
it.
An IV like you an have IV, at the hospital. Yes.
But this guy liked to get it over, like shots over and over again. So I get these big fat needles and I just kind of, and it took forever.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But he liked it. So what are you going to do? He's paying me. It's 3-hour sessions. Not bad money, my friends. Yeah.
Would you ever have any advice? Sure. Just curious.
Yeah.
Would you ever, do you have any advice for people that are thinking about going into that line of work?
Yeah, I've had a couple of people ask me that. You know, when I went into it, I lucked out and I found this place. It was like a bondage house. So it was like, it's different to be an independent. And usually I personally think that if you can get training at a house, that's the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. Some of the places are a little skanky, but I don't know if there's any really high-end houses anymore. I just don't know. There very well may be. And there's some of the older houses are still around. I don't know, you know, what the level of training is anymore. But basically, it's like a bunch of people sitting around, and you can practice on each other, and you learn how to answer the phone. And that's actually really fucking important, is learning how to screen clients. It changes all the time with the technology. So I think now people don't do phones as much anymore. But personally, I think that hearing somebody's voice before you get into that kind of situation with them is actually really telling mm-hmm. and really important. If somebody, the other thing to do is really listen to your gut and really respect your own limits. Because if something creeps you out and you keep doing it, you're going to burn out and hate yourself. So don't, if you're like, you know, I know women that have done some activities that they weren't comfortable with and they would just feel completely like bad about themselves and they couldn't do the work. Mm-hmm. So like if, you know, you've been fine with letting somebody kiss your feet for years and then all of a sudden like it starts to gross you out and it happens more than once, you just can't do it anymore. You can't. Yeah. Because if you do, you're going to, like I said, it's just, it's not good for you. It's not good for anybody to like tolerate something that feels yucky and creepy. So that, and then just screening is the most important thing. Also, you can't be good at everything. Find the things you really like to do that you're really good at and just focus on those, and the people will come to you. You're not going to be a good fit with everybody, and that's not personal, it's just life. So
some of these could also be art advice. Are you familiar at all with Harry Potter?
Yeah, I have read all the books numerous times, and I'm a little ashamed to admit it. But I'm
I love
it.
That you did that.
I fucking love those books. It's funny because I had a friend who was like, have you read? I was like kind of down in the dumps. She's like, have you read Harry Potter? I'm like, no, I don't want to. She's like, they're really good. And I'm like, really? She's like, and this is somebody who's like discerning.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right. So I started reading and I wasn't into it the first chapter or two. And then I was hooked like a fucking crack addict and I couldn't stop reading them. And I don't think all the books were out yet. So.
My reason for asking this question is, do you feel like if the art schools of the Bay Area were houses of Hogwarts, would SFAI be Slytherin?
Oh, that is an awesome question. I think SFAI would like to think of itself as Slytherin. I don't know. The SFAI isn't evil, is the problem with that. Right.
But is Slytherin totally evil?
I think
their thing was that they were so ambitious and like self-centered.
I think that's good for SFAI if you think
not that, that I really think people from SFAI or students are really like that, but I just always feel that way because when I go to lectures there's hecklers always. And the graffiti in the bathroom is always very snarky.
Well, I will say that the students that there have a very strong, and the younger ones I'm speaking specifically of, because they have a very strong sense of like they're the real deal and they know it.
Yeah.
And there is a bit of pride about, I think that school's got a definite like fuck you kind of vibe. Yeah. You know, kind of punk rock, like I don't know how to explain it exactly, but I personally love that school and I wish I could stay in school forever for the rest of my life. I actually fucking love teaching there, and the students are amazing. But I don't know, because I never went to school anywhere else. So I know I'm a little bit unqualified to say anything about it. But you know, I think all those different schools have there's certainly sensibility for sure, and there may even be like a sensibility that's complete bullshit, but people just assign like CCA students are like this, and SFAI students are like that, and so maybe in that regard, like. maybe there's a bit of arrogance or a bit of like, I'm in the cool school. So yeah, I guess in that way, yes, maybe SFAI is officially Slytherin. So I'm going to agree with you.
We talked in our last episode about not drinking, like I don't drink, and is kind of shitty. Sometimes being an art event, so people are always like, because we ask people for advice for like coping with openings and stress and anxiety. And they're always like, drink.
Yeah. Loosen up, get a drink.
I say, loosen up, go shoot some heroin in the bathroom. And you'll feel great. And you won't really fucking care. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, you'll just fall asleep and everything will be fine.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I am actually a clean and sober person, which I think most people know. I don't care. I've been clean so long. I got clean when I was almost, I wasn't even 18 yet, you guys. Because I did a lot of shenanigans as a teenager. Pretty heavy duty shenanigans. So for me, it's such a, like, not even a question for me that I'm gonna drink. Like, it's not even something I think of. No. So what do I do when I'm uncomfortable? I mean, I think that that's a lifelong piece of work, you know, and it's also depends on your mood, right? Yeah. So if you walk into a place and you don't know anybody, just pretend to look at the art. Even if
great
you're
advice.
Not. Great advice. Pretend to look at the art. I mean, this is kind of like just basic if you're in any social situation where you don't know people. I think looking at the work, I mean, maybe you could like go get a pretzel at the pretzel bowl.
There's probably some non-alcoholic or food type
thing.
Yeah,
and you could stand over there and be like, hey, I really like the, or fucking just start up a conversation with somebody. I mean, don't be a creep about it. It's funny, I feel like I heard somebody else saying this. You know, you don't want to be too creepy. You don't want to be like, corner someone and be like, what do you think of the shade of blue in this painting over here? Really turns me on. I mean, I don't know. I think, I mean, I know I come off as like very comfortable probably and gregarious, but I'm actually a little shy sometimes. So I overcompensate by being hilariously charming.
And then do you have times then after where you have to like rehash everything you said for hours and hours?
No, it's usually if I say something stupid, because sometimes being a person who overcompensates by being hilariously charming, I go a little too far and then I'm like, fuck, why did I say that to them? Or I can see somebody getting offended. Like I offended this, there's this gallerist who I actually like a lot who shall remain nameless. And I've met her numerous times. But one time we were out with a mutual friend and I was being a little extra salty. And I looked over at her and she was just, I could just tell she was just like disapproving of me. Like she was, maybe I'm wrong, but it appeared to me that she was offended. And I was like, fuck. And so I feel bad about that. So I know that sometimes I'm a little overly loose, sophomoric, foul-mouthed at times. So yes, I definitely do feel like a dick sometimes and sort of am filled with self-loathing, but you know, at the same time, it's like you just gotta you can't, I mean, this is two sides of this, right? Like it's like anything, like you can pick yourself apart and give yourself a hard time, which is I think more natural, or you can be like, I'm gonna give myself a pass, I'm just doing my best. You know, it's hard to be an artist. It's hard to be human. Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah.
When I was in grad school, you came and visited us.
I did.
And did a studio visit with me. I just wondered if you had advice for people for studio visits. Like, because I think we've asked people before about their studio visit method. Do you feel like you have a method?
I don't know. Well, you know, my goal is always to try to help articulate something that perhaps the student has not been available, or maybe not even just the student, anybody I'm doing a studio, because I do them with my friends sometimes, to help them articulate something that may be a little out of reach for them. That I'm pretty good at that, actually, I'd like to say so myself. You know, it's hard because the person's trying to tell you all about their work as quickly as possible, because usually it's just an hour, right? Well, again, like what I do is I'm always looking for threads. So what I find to be a really exciting challenge, if it's somebody showing me like three different bodies of work and they're like, these are unrelated. And I'm like, no, they're not. And I love, that's the thing I really get off on, is trying to find that thread in all the different pieces to help them, you know, see, because there's usually some underlying something that's just always there in your work. It's that little thing that digs in the back of your brain that keeps you I think it's a real motivator, but it's also that thing that you just can't fucking figure out. And then you're never going to figure out, because that's your problem solving assignment for the rest of your life as an artist, maybe. I mean, maybe that's overstating it, but the thing is I usually don't give any technical feedback because I think that's so useless. I mean, it's not useless, but it's like, if it's really just impeding me even getting the work, to me, I try to look at the work, assume everything's intentional. You know, if I'm looking at really shitty, bad work, you know, and that's again,
shitty
that's,
how though, that's like subjective. Technically shitty or like
just bad, crappy, banal crap work. I just try to pick out, I always assume the student is trying to say something and maybe they're just not saying it right. Or maybe they're saying it badly. And also, it's not my job. What?
It's generous of you.
Yeah. It's not my job to make them a good artist. It's to help them articulate. It's to help them make the work that they want to make or that they need to make that they don't even know they need to make yet. You know, that's really my job, is to help them find the right, how to say it better, more clearly. With maybe they're working in the wrong medium, mm-hmm. You know, maybe they're like, I'm a painter, God damn it. But really, like, they should be, you know, doing performance or, you know, video or something. I always go to performance and video. A little biased, can I say? I mean, I like painting, too. Don't get me wrong.
Every student is like, have you tried video?
I know. Have you tried video? Maybe this is a performance you're doing. Where does the process begin and end? Maybe this is the piece. I have said that to people. Oh, well. Guilty as charged. Yeah. It's really not about whether or not I think the work. It really isn't. I can think whatever I want about the work. Like, I kind of feel like that's my subjectivity, and it's really not even relevant whether I think it's good or not. I mean, if I think the work is great, I can't help but be like, oh, my God, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's more important for me to help articulate what I'm seeing in the work, help to maybe redirect things if I think it's not being, there's the better way for them to be saying it in their voice. It's really about, I'm really in service to what the students, you know, ineffable, unarticulated thing that's trying to come out. That's what I'm trying to communicate with. I sound like a hippie,
doula or a midwife.
I'm like a midwife helping them give birth in their studio.
It's helpful, actually.
And I'm then like, I eat the placenta.
Have you ever been in a studio where the work is almost offensive?
Like,
it's insensitive,
yes.
And it's offensive.
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of like, wait, hold up here. You need to step back. And, yeah.
No, because you know why? I personally feel anybody can make any kind of work they want to make.
Right.
So long as they are ready to accept the consequences when somebody comes and kicks them in the balls over
right.
that.
Yes.
Whatever, incredibly racist thing they're doing.
So how do you...
I don't have a moral judge. I genuinely...
What do you say in response to... I mean, not that you're saying you can't make this work. Obviously, you wouldn't say that.
But. I would say, you know, your work is going to piss a lot of people off.
Yeah.
Or I would say, I would really talk about the work formally.
What if they're not aware of that?
Then they're an idiot.
Yeah.
And they need to be bitch slapped. But, you know, I'll tell them. You know, I'll say...
I think it's important, actually.
No, it is. It is important. It's absolutely important.
Really potentially problematic for these reasons. Or, you know, think about it.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes students don't know. You know?
Yeah.
And it's very tricky because, especially if you're doing work where you're using yourself in it,
mm-hmm.
The particularity of your physicality becomes content.
Sure.
And it's really hard if you're not a straight white male. Because mm-hmm. then your work is read in this category.
Yeah.
I remember there was this woman who, I can't remember her name, but she was, God, what the hell was the thing even? It was like, I was at some panel or something. Was she a student? I can't remember. Anyway, she was saying something about how she used to do performance, but her body was marked in this way that made it impossible for her to make the work she wanted to make. Because she was a lady of color,
mm-hmm.
right? That's really interesting because I fucking hate when my work is, this doesn't happen in a long time, but I had like somebody once say to me, isn't this just feminism? Isn't this just about feminism? And I'm like, okay, because I'm a woman making this work, it's just about feminism.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, the thing to me is that saying that kind of that's a fucking lazy reading because that's basically like dismissing the work and just categorizing it in a way without actually talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can do a feminist reading to my work, but my work isn't quote unquote about feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even say, I'm not even that interested in gender in my work. It's just like a vehicle to talk about something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always, I mean, this is what I try to teach my students in the critique process too, is that always be as aware as you can possibly humanly possibly be of your subjectivity and when you're projecting And try to be, I know it's an impossible goal, but it's a good one to strive for. It's to just read the work, read with the thing itself as it is, good, bad, well done, badly done, horrible, offensive. Just read it and just say what's there. This is what this does. And this is what this will do to, you know, if it's like really misogynist work, like, well, this is like, you know, rather than being like, you hate women. Like, don't talk about the artist either. That's another really big one that I stress a lot in my work is we're not talking about the artist. We're not even talking about the artist's work. We're talking about this one piece, you know, I mean, sometimes you're talking about a body of work, but so in other words, like, you know, we're not talking about you and your relationship to women. We're talking about this piece, and it might be a highly misogynist piece, but maybe there, you know, to talk about it, just assuming, like, giving the piece the time to do what it's doing to you and to read it that way. And I think that's what I try to do.
Is there anything else that you would like listeners to know?
I usually am very lazy and not very interested in, like, what's going on, you know, the politics and this institution's doing this and that. I just don't give a shit. It's funny, you know, I'm athletic and I like to do sports, but I never want to watch sports, read about sports. Same with, like, So this show, you know, I'm an artist, I make art, I'm interested, you know, I have artist friends, I like knowing what they're doing, but I usually don't give a shit about the bigger picture. And your show is just so well done and so funny and smart and probing, I'm using that word again, that it's really enjoyable and I really do get a kick out of it. And it's actually made me know what's going on in the Bay Area. And I'd like to have a competition between you guys and Kunstcapades.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, the Tim Sullivan, Josh Pieper. Or maybe you guys could join forces.
What will we do? Feats of strength?
Oh, okay. Fist fight.
Hell no. I'm not a fighter.
She's a lover, like I said earlier.
I think I can take him on.
Maysoon. Yeah, she's scrappy.
Thank you so much for talking to us today after all that very tender words.
Mm. And as always...
Congratulations.
You said it too.
Lovely. All right. Well, I hope that gets you through some dark times, listener. And on that note, from the bridge
to the other bridge,
to the island in between, this has been...
Congratulations, Pine Tree.